Tonight, a chance of showers and possibly a thunderstorm after midnight. Hope it doesn't wake us all up. Cloudy with a low around 66 degrees. Tomorrow, more of the same. Showers and possibly a thunderstorm. Actually, an 80% chance, so it's likely to be pretty rainy tomorrow. A high near 72 degrees. And that's your weather. Currently still 69 degrees in Pottstown. And Rob said he had a pretty smooth drive in, so maybe the fog that I encountered and all the rain. It was pouring when I came in, Rob. Yeah. Absolutely pouring and foggy, but I guess it's looking better out our window now. I thought I'd do a little introduction as to how I met Deborah Henson Conant. It was at a harp festival in, I think, 1991, and I was taking a class. Well, I didn't take the class. I signed up for a class with her, and I went into the class the first day, and there she is trying to teach a bunch of harpists to play jazz. And I, of course, was raised as sort of your traditional, you know, classical kind of harpist. And I thought, this woman is nuts. She wants us to play Take Five. She thinks we could do this on the harp. And I lasted a day in that workshop and then switched to a different workshop and then saw her in concert. And it changed my whole view of what the harp is and what the harp can do. And suddenly, that rock star that we all wanted to be in high school came out, and it hasn't been the same since. So I thought it might be fair to give you guys a little taste of Deborah Henson Conant and Take Five. Wait, it's pouring like mad down here. What's it doing in Boston?
It's drizzling like not very mad.
Oh, okay. Well, wait, well, next time I'm coming up there to do the interview, all right?
That's fine. I hear you guys got hit by lightning last night.
Yeah, we're in this thing that happens with thunderstorms in the evenings and overnight, you know, just enough to wake us up and cause commotion at radio stations and things. But
that's great.
Yeah, no need to worry. Deborah, I introduced you to our listeners this morning through some of your music. We started out, just so you know, at 6 a.m. with Watermelon Boogie.
Oh, I love that.
It seemed like a good 6 a.m. song. And then we did Dance With Me.
Mm.
And now we're just coming out of Take Five, because I explained to everybody, and I should explain this to you, I suppose, that when I first met you at a harp festival in about 1991, and you tried to teach us to play Take Five on the harp, I thought you were completely nuts. Now, I've known you for a few years, and I know you're completely nuts, but it's okay.
Well, you know, it's really funny because it was that very harp festival in Edinburgh that taught me that it was possible to play Take Five on the harp.
Wait, you mean you really weren't prepared to teach that to a bunch of us budding classical harpists at the time?
Well, I was hoping if you were having trouble with 4/4, maybe you could do the 5/4.
Well, that's one way to look at it.
For people who aren't musicians, you know, 4/4 is a very simple rhythm that goes 1/2/3/4, 1/2/3/4, and most of our music is, or a lot of the music that we hear is in that rhythm. But Take Five is a wonderful tune, in part because of the rhythm. The background is 1/2/3/4/5, 1/2/3/4/5, or 1/2/1/2/3. So it's this really kind of jarring for some, and really kind of giddy making for others. And it's fun to listen to, but it's really tough to play, especially for budding musicians.
And, well, I have to say, I dropped out of that workshop, but everybody that stuck with it did pretty well.
Yeah.
And now I'm mad. That's a missed opportunity. And that's a big thing I think I've learned from you is, you know, don't miss those opportunities. Stretch yourself. Try it. What the heck?
That's right, because you may not be able to get it in that moment, and I think one of my principles is you have to be bad to be good. You can't just go immediately to good. You have to have the tolerance to go through that experience of not being good at something. And that's something that I had to learn with the harp, because nobody was trying to do what I was trying to do. And so in order to even just like sort of claw my way to partly being able to do what I could do, I would go to other players and I would ask them, how do you do this? They'd show me, and of course it was impossible to do what they did on my instrument, so I'd have to kind of figure it out. And there was always a period where it just sounded crazy. You know, I mean, it sounded like if you're cooking something on a stove and it's just like, it's really not there yet. You know, like somehow when you're cooking vegetables and they're still really watery.
Yep.
You know, well, that was kind of the experience of like, you know, I know where I'm going, but I'm not there yet. And I just had to trust that if I kept going, I would find my way to where I wanted to be.
Well, you know, that begs the question, Deborah. You're trying to play this fabulous jazz music, extremely creative stuff. Why the harp? I mean, what were you thinking?
Yeah. Well, I certainly wasn't thinking jazz when I started. Like a lot of people, I sort of stumbled into it in that I had had a few lessons on many instruments as a child. And then when I got into college, my college needed a harpist. And I had had like 6 lessons. So
wow.
I was, you know, the expert.
Oh, yeah.
And, but how I started is not really as interesting to me as what happened after that, why I kept with it. And why I kept with it was because it is this incredible physical challenge that was fascinating to me because, you know, I might have liked to be an athlete in another life, but I'm really not an athlete. But playing the harp combines coordination and a challenge of the mind and a certain athleticism that was really fascinating to me. And I also kind of felt like the instrument was an underdog. You know, everybody thought, oh, girls have to have long blonde hair.
Right,
and, you know,
yeah.
Go back and play this instrument. And I saw it and I was like, that is not fair. And I think it kind of reminded me, in a sort of feminist perspective, of how women were marginalized. This instrument was kind of marginalized in the same way. Yeah, it's really pretty. It sounds really nice. Shut up and stay in the back.
Well, and that's interesting too, because historically, of course, it was men that played the harp, not women, until...
Yeah, I mean, we could have, like, you know, a five-hour show about the history of the harp. It's really amazing, because it does break down along gender lines in a lot of countries. And at the same time, it was the instrument that brought women into the orchestra, so it was the instrument that brought them in to be professional musicians. It's a very fascinating history.
It really is. And there's a harp maker that has a saying I love. It's not all pearls and chiffon. And
right.
That's one of the things I remember when I went to see your first concert at that harp festival. I later called my husband and said, oh my God, she was wearing a leather miniskirt and a sequined bustier, you know. It really changed the way I thought about the instrument. Now, Deborah, we asked our listeners to send in questions for you. So you can decide if you want to answer this on the fly or if you have to multitask it in the back of your mind for a minute. One of our listeners asked a fascinating question. What musician, living or dead, would you most like to work with if you had the opportunity? That's a big question. That's a hard question.
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, there's definitely a lot. But, you know, somebody that I always wanted to work with was actually a teacher. And her name was Boulanger. And I can't remember suddenly her first name. Probably one of your listeners knows it. She taught many of the greats from, I think, Debussy to Bernstein. And I could have that wrong, but I always wanted to work with that woman. She works with composers. She kind of brought them to their own. Nadia Boulanger.
Ah, right.
One of the people who I would really have loved to work with. I mean, there are so many musicians I would love to work with now. There's another person who was very influential when I was a kid to me, who combined spoken word and music. And his name is Ken Nordine.
Oh, right. I recognize that name.
I think he's pretty famous radio-type person. He was so influential to me, you know, and I mix story and music and humor and some physicality as well. So he is somebody I would love to work with. I'd love to work with Laurie Anderson. I'd love to work with Sayla Fleck.
I hope these people are all listening.
I mean, I could just go on and on.
Well, Deborah...
Oh, wait a minute. Yo-Yo Ma and...
Oh, yeah.
Leonard Bernstein.
Okay. Big shout out.
Right.
Deborah, next Tuesday here in Pottstown, you're going to get to work with 14 musicians. And, you know,
that's
musicians,
right.
Not harpists necessarily. Some will be. I know there's a violin player in the mix. I know we're going to have a singer in the mix. So... tell us a little bit about the workshop you'll be doing here in Pottstown.
Well, the workshop is called Fireworks for the Creative Spirit. And I just also want to sort of say my website, which is www.hipharp.com, HIPHARP.com. And I want to say that because I'm sure I won't get to describe everything, and there's a lot of information on my website about these. In fact, on the front page, it says Pottstown, and you can go there and find out about the workshop. This is a workshop that I developed... based on seven principles that I kind of broke my work down into, from the impulse that we have to make music through the moment of liftoff when we're actually performing the music. And I like to think in principles instead of specific notes, because if you think in principles, you can use those principles not only for specific music, but for any art form or really for anything that you're doing, you know, with your life. And one of the reasons that I wanted to make this workshop is that when I was a kid, I did not go to concerts. My mother was the greatest performer I knew, literally. She was an opera singer. And so the greatest performances that I saw happened in my living room, the most professional performances I saw, in my living room, up close, with me able to ask questions right afterwards and literally look over the artist's shoulder and ask, how did you do that? What made you come here? How can I do that? And so I wanted to create an atmosphere that was like that in a space that is not a concert hall, where people can move around, where they can literally look over my shoulder, and where I'm talking to them about what I'm doing, not just about what I'm doing, but how they can take what I'm doing and apply it to what they're doing. Because every person in that workshop, no matter what level, is an artist in their heart. And we all want to know how to take creativity and apply it to that art form so that we're actually expressing ourselves instead of copying somebody else or instead of sort of fumbling around with what we're doing.
And I have to say, in the interest of full disclosure here, I've taken several workshops with Deborah. I've been lucky to go up and do week-long workshops, which leave you exhausted and, you know, feeling really, really wanting to get out there and try out some of the things you've learned. And I apply these principles to radio. I apply them to my teaching. I apply them to life. So I think it's really important, especially being on the radio and people in the area know I'm involved with the Tri-County Performing Arts Center. You know, these are lessons for life, and these are things that really can help you improve the quality of life for yourself, improve the whole area. If you're not comfortable with what you're doing performance-wise, or if you're kind of stuck, I was at a place for a while where I was kind of stuck musically. It's great to be able to do something like this and find that freedom again.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the word performance, I mean, we use it not only for the stage, but in every single thing that we do, performance is an important part of it. And getting from the impulse of what it is we want to do to actually following through on that, actually seeing ourselves doing the thing that we want to do. And one of the reasons that I love working in principles, like you said, instead of working in specifics, is that it lets you take them and apply them to radio, or apply them to cooking, or apply them to cleaning your house, or apply them to being
now,
a musician.
I have to stop you there, Deborah, because I've heard about your cooking skill. So,
right. Well, you know, anybody can see my cooking by going to burntfoodmuseum.com.
Oh, and Rob is on there right now. I see Rob typing in the address net right now. Yes, burntfoodmuseum.com, worth a visit.
Yes, indeed. I think I may have given you an apron from the Burnt Food Museum at some point.
I believe I have it, and it is actually appropriate for my cooking as well.
That's great. As for so many, one of my favorite things about the Burnt Food Museum are the testimonials that people send. But there's a serious side to the Burnt Food Museum. I mean, I actually do burn food, and then I started displaying it, and then it got kind of famous. I mean, it was on the Food Network and it was on NPR. But one of the things that I love about the Burnt Food Museum is that it makes you stop for a second and say, wait a minute, I thought I wanted to make a pancake or whatever, but before I decide that what I did was a failure, let me stop here for a minute and look not at what it isn't, but what it is. And is it wonderful in some way? And can I have fun with it? And can I share it with people in a way that brings them humor or brings them insight? And in fact, the Burnt Food Museum does that, you know, that you can see from the testimonials. So it's that idea of before you decide you have failed, before you decide you've made a mistake, stop for a second and look at it. Appreciate that thing that you did and see whether, in fact, maybe it's another kind of masterpiece.
That is great. And Rob is holding up a sign from the other studio saying, I burn water. That's why Jody does the cooking in his house.
That's great. I believe he can get an award for that one.
Okay, Rob, Rob's excited. Rob's happy about that. Well, Deborah, I hate to cut this off, but we want to get a little bit of your music in, and we're coming up to the 8 o'clock hour. So I'm going to thank you very much for joining us today. I'm going to pick up the telephone here as soon as Rob takes us off the air, and I want to set up the next track for our listeners. We're going to hear a little bit of Baroque Flamenco from Deborah's PBS special, her Grammy-nominated CD, her, what can I say, just great, great talent, whether it's food, whether it's music, and also as a teacher. She's one of those people that not only can do but can teach. So, Deborah, I look forward to seeing you next Tuesday night here in Pottstown. It will be at the Tri-County Performing Arts Center, sponsored by WPAZ in the morning show. And if any of our listeners want information, go to hipharp.com.
Great. Thanks so much, Betsy. It was great.
There was once a troupe of flamenco dancers who discovered that their new guitar, which they had gotten for such a reasonable price, was really just a time machine. But by the time they discovered that, they were already in the court of Marie Antoinette. She was hosting a ball that night at which everyone else was dancing the minuet. So the flamenco dancers attempted to fit in. This was the result. It's called Baroque Flamenco.
Thank you.
1370 WPAZ Pottstown. The new PAZ.